Thanks for downloading the latest from the Peter B. Collins Show. I want to thank the listeners who support my efforts by subscribing, including Raymond Welch, Mark Brodsky, Joseph Clarici, and Stephen King. Is that the novelist Stephen King? I don't know. Today, we deliver another in the Boiling Frogs interview series, co-hosted with Sibelle Edmonds. And as Julian Assange fights for his freedom, he's currently holed up in the Embassy of Ecuador in London and asking for extradition to Ecuador. The court-martial of Private Bradley Manning is still underway, although not actively in session, at Fort Meade, Maryland. And joining us today is Chase Madar, the author of a powerful new book called The Passion of Bradley Manning. He's a hero to me.
Time loves a hero. But only time will tell if he's real. He's a legend from heaven. If he ain't, he's a masterpiece from hell.
Welcome to Boiling Frogs.
That the dice are loaded, everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes.
Everybody knows, but today, NSA's illegal domestic wiretapping, FBI's national security letters, state secret privilege, TSA's 1 million-plus no-fly list, persecution of government whistleblowers, perpetual wars, rendition and torture. Can you feel the water boiling?
Welcome to the Boiling Frogs. With Sibelle Edmonds, I'm Peter B. Collins. Our guest today is Chase Madar. He's the author of a brand new book called The Passion of Bradley Manning. And I find it a very interesting book that recaps the case that is underway right now with the court-martial of Private First Class Bradley Manning being conducted at Fort Meade, Maryland. Chase Madar, thank you for joining us on The Boiling Frogs.
Thanks for having me, Peter and Sibelle.
Tell us a little bit about Chase and what brought you to your interest in the case of Bradley Manning and why you wrote the book.
Well, first I have to ask you, do you have a bleeper, you know, in your studio? Because I'm going to say something right off the bat that's very risque, well, scandalous, borderline offensive, and I just got to get it off my chest. You got your finger on the bleeper?
You're very kind to warn us, but we're in podcast land here, and your free speech rights are unfettered.
Well, that ruins the fun a little bit, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. And here we go. Knowing what your government is doing is really not such a bad thing. There, I said it.
Wow.
You know, knowing what your government is doing, especially in a time of war, is not such a bad thing. And we have this incredible problem where we don't know what our government is doing a great deal of the time. Washington is classifying some 77 million documents a year, that's according to the New York Times, mm-hmm. and this extreme government secrecy is killing us. And I don't mean that as a metaphor, because when you have this kind of extreme government secrecy, you end up making some very poorly informed decisions that can be catastrophic in their consequences, like invading Iraq, for instance. And look at that. That's, you know, 5,000 American soldiers and military contractors dead, easily over 100,000 Iraqis dead. These are the costs in blood and money of extreme government secrecy that mm-hmm. we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drew me to this case of Bradley Manning. You know, we need people like Bradley Manning. We need whistleblowers like Manning and Sibelle Edmonds. And we need groups like WikiLeaks to just give us a little bit of the truth here so we know what our government is doing. It's really that simple.
And your personal background, I understand you're an attorney, is that right?
That's right. I'm an attorney in New York. I practice mostly bleeding heart civil rights law.
All right. And give us an idea of the kinds of cases that you've handled, Chase.
Oh, I've done everything from disability benefits to housing to employment law to gay and lesbian and transgender rights to youth law to bigger social reform projects like trying to reform the school security system in New York City, where you have this overkill of police personnel in the schools that, instead of making many of the schools safer, just add a whole new layer of violent chaos.
And Chase, your new book, I would say, celebrates the work of Bradley Manning. And let me just share my own bias, because I agree with you. On my laptop computer, I have a little yellow round sticker with a depiction of Bradley Manning, and the legend says, "Free Bradley Manning." And I do believe that he is a hero. And while nothing has been proven against him, the circumstantial evidence that is before us is that he is responsible for delivering to WikiLeaks huge caches of information about the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, and the true reports on those who were sent to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And that's among others. The State Department cables. It is quite a library, an archive of very important information. And I want to get to one point that I think is really critical early on here, and that is that the Obama administration has responded with a brutal crackdown on Bradley Manning even before anything has been proven. And he has been subjected to Guantanamo-like detention and a kind of trial in the public realm for which he's mostly been convicted already. But I want to start with what the costs are to the government, because the administration has tried to portray this as extremely damaging. And officials from former Defense Secretary Robert Gates to the current Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have publicly stated that this has been extremely damaging. But you very clearly write in the book that, first of all, Bradley Manning released mostly things that are embarrassing, some of which were marked secret, but nothing, not one shred of information attributed to Bradley Manning rose to the level of top secret. And so you recount comments from Gates and Clinton to the effect that really there has been no significant damage from these releases and that no one has died as a result, which is one of the early allegations that surfaced.
Thank you so much, Peter. That is just an essential point. And I will say again, categorically, that these WikiLeaks disclosures have not harmed our national interests or our national security in the slightest. And again, there is not a single casualty, whether military or civilian, that can be credibly tied to these WikiLeaks disclosures. Not one.
But some egos of diplomats have been bruised.
Oh, I know. Horrors. But of course, we should never confuse the egos and the so-called reputations of our elite officials with the true national interests of our country. Those are two separate things.
So early on in the book, you unapologetically list five reasons why Bradley Manning deserves a medal for what he's done. Briefly make that case for us.
Well, our foreign policy has been such a disaster over the past 10 years. 10 years of failed wars that have added nothing to national security, but have killed a great many people and run up quite a tab. Now, any private employee who screwed up that badly would be fired on the spot, or at the very least, put under additional heavy supervision. And that's what WikiLeaks does. It provides badly needed supervision for our foreign policy elite that clearly needs help in doing its job. The idea of just trusting them and letting them, you know best and do whatever they want, that has brought disaster to us. And that is the true value of WikiLeaks. I mean, there are other reasons, too. Just exposing the pathological overclassification in Washington is important in itself. We have an absolutely broken system if we're classifying 77 million documents a year, And we are only now declassifying or finishing the declassification of documents from the War of 1812. I mean, the system is just broken.
Well, it certainly is. And I want to take a moment here because you reference in the book an incident that occurred, you may not know this, but I'm in San Francisco, and in April a year ago, 2011, there was a private breakfast fundraiser that was held by the Obama campaign, and a group of individuals put up $5,000 each so that they could attend this breakfast, and in the middle of a pretty boring set of comments from the president, they interrupted him and started singing, and this is what that sounded like.
We're going to insist on politics that is responsive to hopes and dreams of ordinary folks.
Mr. President, we actually wrote you a song. Can we sing it?
Dear Mr. President, we honor you today, sir. Each of us has given you $5,000.
So the president was unable to regain control until they finished that little ditty, and I don't know if you could make out over the phone, Chase, the lyrics they were singing, but they talked about his cell, the confinement of 23 hours a day, and it really made an important point. And I'm looking for the recording, and if I can find it, I will edit it into our conversation here. But somebody with a camera phone captured an exchange between one of the attendees, a donor, and the president after the breakfast. And it was really very, very troubling to hear what Obama said. He said flatly that Bradley Manning had broken the law. He falsely stated that the president himself has to abide by security regulations and can't just declassify something, which is certainly not true. And then he falsely alleged that Bradley Manning was guilty of releasing top secret information. And we've already covered that that is not the case. So it is so remarkable that a sitting president of the United States, to whom the members of a court-martial are beholden, he is their commander-in-chief, took a position. It wasn't quite in public, but it became public, and it showed his predetermined bias to really punish and persecute Bradley Manning for what is an embarrassment, but hardly any significant compromise to America's security.
Well, absolutely, Peter. It's prejudicial in the worst way. This is command interference of the worst kind in the military justice system. That should never have happened. But I think the most important point that you're making is that it's completely false that Washington officials never leak and that they all obey the law when it comes to classified information. In fact, elite Washington officials leak classified information, even top secret information, all the time. It's a routine occurrence. And not a week goes by without the Washington Post or the New York Times quoting named or unnamed Washington officials spilling the beans about something top secret. And, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing either. We need to know what our government is doing, and a great deal of what does get classified, even as top secret, should not be classified at all. But we have a real problem when the elites are able to leak with impunity and not face any punishment, but then the book gets thrown at a little private. That's just wrong. That's not the rule of law.
Chase, you have written and also talked about the mainstream media treatment of Bradley Manning. Because on one side, we have the government, and this is what we've been seeing with government whistleblowers. In fact, President Obama has persecuted and prosecuted more whistleblowers than all our presidents throughout the history combined. Now, on the other hand, we have the fourth branch of our government, the mainstream media, and these are the people who do have the power to shape opinion, to inform the public, the majority. And you have been very outspoken, and I'm thankful to you for being that and doing that, on the mainstream media's treatment of Bradley Manning and where they have been and what it says to us in terms of what kind of media we have today in the United States.
Well, that's an essential point, too. I mean, for lack of a better technical term, the mainstream media coverage of Bradley Manning has been just crap. The New York Times and the Washington Post have run story after story after story based on the WikiLeaks revelations. They obviously consider these disclosures to be important, worthy of print, and big news stories. And you would think that they would stand by their source and protect him. That is, after all, customary in journalism, or has been. Instead, they have been happy to leave Bradley Manning hanging out to dry. They have systematically ignored his motives for allegedly leaking these documents. And his motives, according to the chat logs, which is the only source we have, are very plain. Bradley Manning seems to have leaked these documents because he thinks the public has a right to know about them, that you can't make well-informed decisions without information, as simple as that. But instead, the Times and the Post and other media, God knows, have been happy just to pathologize Bradley Manning and portray him as a weirdo, as a freak, as someone who did what he did either because he's crazy or because he's gay or some combination of that. And that's just a sideshow. It makes no sense. This is what happens to all whistleblowers, by the way. The government or whatever power that is made uncomfortable by the leaks always tries to pathologize and marginalize whistleblowers by making them seem crazy, and that is just almost never the case.
And why is that? I mean, because we always, in our show, try to diagnose this disease that has inflicted our media. Why do you believe this is the case? And especially with New York Times and Washington Post, and I just read one of the excerpts from one of your interviews, and you really had some sound reasoning on people such as Bill Keller of New York Times, the former editor of the New York Times. Why these people? I mean, are they the Pravda today? You know, today's Pravda, because they're being the mouthpiece for government, and they have been. You know, they have been selling us lies after lies after lies that have been fed to them by the government, whether it's the weapons of mass destruction, or in every single case, we have been getting nothing but lies from these people, and these lies have been given to them by our government, and I don't think they are that stupid to have been fooled all along. It just seems to me that they are willingly doing this. So is that what they see their role today? They are the government propaganda machine, their PR arm.
I Bill Keller of the New York Times, don't get me started, Sibel. But too late, you've done it. So these people, are they stupid or are they cynical? I think it's more both. I think they're very self-important. I think they love having privileged access to power in Washington. So faced with these great stories coming out of WikiLeaks, their response is not to protect WikiLeaks and protect Bradley Manning, the alleged source. They're trying instead to triangulate themselves and say, yeah, on the one hand, these WikiLeaks stories, it's good journalism, but hey, you know, we're still serious people. We still want to be pals with Washington, with power and authority. So we're going to dump on WikiLeaks. We're going to make the Bradley Manning and these other sources look like weirdos, just so you know that we're still on your side, Washington. I think that's what's going on. I think you have a real problem throughout America's intelligentsia, intellectuals, whether in the media or the legal profession, the universities, the nonprofits, who just don't have any real sense of urgency or crisis after the incredible foreign policy failures of the past 10 years, which have, you know, cost this country and the world a huge amount of blood, carnage, and money as well. This is a real difference between now and at the end of the Vietnam War, when many intellectuals did rally behind Daniel Ellsberg, the Bradley Manning of his day. And they did so in large part, I think, because there was a sense of urgency, a sense of crisis. Back when you had a draft in this country that brought, you know, the prospect of the Vietnam War into every middle-class household, kitchen, and living room, because middle-class kids had, at least in theory, some risk of being sent to Vietnam. Ever since the draft got abolished in 1973, that's been eliminated, and the middle class, and God knows the upper class, certainly don't have much skin in the game anymore, and middle-class intellectuals just are happy to go along with the government rather than think critically.
No, those are very good points. Now, back to the mainstream media, sometimes they even go further than just playing government's pals, because in some cases they have actually, and this is the mainstream media, they have acted as snitches, informants. I mean, we had a case of AT&T whistleblower Klein, and in his case, he actually provided the reporters at LA Times with documents on illegal eavesdropping by the NSA. And the LA Times editor actually took this information and handed it to the government and said, look, this is what we got from this guy. They didn't publish it. They sat on it. Not only that, they took that information and they actually gave it to the government. Now,
well,
how much worse can you get?
It's just disgraceful. I mean, and people wonder why newspapers are dying. People wonder why Bradley Manning did not go to the New York Times but went to WikiLeaks. And it's because these mainstream media outlets, they just don't have that much credibility left. There's a real trust deficit now. And it's a shame. I mean, the collateral murder video that's the most famous of all the WikiLeaks disclosures, that helicopter video.
Right.
This is something that a Washington Post reporter had access to for a while but declined to publicize. It's also something that Reuters had a chance in getting, but again, they didn't try very hard. They declined to make it public. It is essential viewing for any American who's able to use the internet. We need to see what our wars are like. We need to see what our wars are doing to the people we are ostensibly liberating, and we need to see what kind of situations we're putting our own soldiers in. That different people make different things of that video, but it's incredibly important, and our media failed by not making images and stories like this publicly available.
And Chase, your points and Sabelle's, I think, are very significant, because it is against this backdrop of the willful failure of the major media outlets, and let's focus on Bill Keller and that New York Times. They sat on the domestic wiretapping story for 13 months. At a critical time, they knew about it before the presidential elections of November 2004, and they only revealed it because James Risen's book was going to scoop the newspaper in December of 2005. And with that kind of collusion between government and media over critical issues, and, you know, I don't buy the argument that they were somehow protecting Americans by covering up the massive widespread eavesdropping of Americans who have no connection whatsoever to so-called terrorism. And this is, you know, a very serious problem that Julian Assange, who is somewhat of an eccentric guy and who was targeted, and they're attempting to use the same tactics to discredit him. These are efforts where the media is willing to take the fruits, at least some of the fruits of the labor of allegedly Bradley Manning and certainly Julian Assange, and profit from them while at the same time they collaborate with the government in not just punishing but persecuting these individuals who are alleged to be involved.
Well, they're trying to have it both ways, and it stinks to high heaven. I mean, I think that's an essential point that you're making, that when our big media colludes with the government and fails to ask the tough questions, fails to put out embarrassing information, they are not doing our country any favors. They're not helping our national security. I mean, think about what if the Washington Post and the Times, and, you know, since we're in imagination land, what if even Fox News had been critical during the build-up to the Iraq war? Maybe we wouldn't have gone into Iraq. That would have saved us a great deal of blood, pain, misery, and that would have been a real service to our national security, not just blindly mouthing whatever the government says.
Chase, your book advanced the story for me in a couple of significant ways. Peter Van Buren, the State Department whistleblower, whose book called We Meant Well, has led to a track of termination for him. He's been a guest here on Boiling Frogs, and also I've interviewed him in other settings for my own podcast. And I did not know that he served at the forward base where Bradley Manning was working in this skiff, this secured tent, and that he knew about Manning and was aware at least of the real-time experiences there. So that was a very interesting revelation. You also give us some depth on the motivation of Private Manning, and in particular, how he appeared to be radicalized by one specific event, where he had to go arrest a group of Iraqi intellectuals who had simply exercised what we call First Amendment rights to criticize their own government. And that, coupled with the information that he had access to because of his security clearance and because of the video turkey shoot that you referred to before, these seem to be the events that caused him to say that his belief in the mission and his belief in our government had been fatally shattered.
Absolutely. And his motive, again, is essential to this whole story. And it is a very straightforward political motive that we Americans need to know what our government is doing. We don't need things kept from us. We don't need to be treated like children. And we will be much better off and make much better decisions if our decisions are fully informed rather than based on lies, distortion, and secrecy. And again, our media has just systematically ignored this plainly stated motive in the only real document we have of Manning's motives and thoughts about why he allegedly did what he allegedly did. And that's a shame.
Yeah. Now, there's been a lot of negative stuff published about Manning and his sexual orientation, the interest that he had in exploring a possible sex change operation. And I don't view those as important. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have covered them, but I believe that they have been exposed as part of the effort to discredit him and marginalize him. And I take at face value that his motivation was honorable and really was based on his own dedication to the United States.
Oh, absolutely. I think he allegedly leaked these things out of patriotism, out of a deep sense of duty. The idea that this was rooted in his sexuality is just foolishness. It's a red herring. There are thousands of gays and lesbians in the U.S. military, many of them with some kind of security clearance. And, of course, I mean, they are not all leaking important caches of information. Unfortunately not. We just have Bradley Manning, as far as we know, allegedly, of course. The whole thing is a red herring, and again, it's dredged up mainly to discredit him, to marginalize him, to pathologize him, which is how whistleblowers are usually treated.
Now, as a whistleblower, I have a comment here and then a question, and that is, the worst thing that happened to us, I mean, we go through awful experiences. You know, with me, I went through the court system and the awful Congress, and it, you know, didn't get anywhere. But through my organization, I have over 150 national security whistleblowers. The worst part of the experience has been the public indifference. Even when, let's say, the report comes out and when public get to know it, the fact that there is this really numb difference, the lack of public outrage, and that has gone a long way to discourage from potential truth tellers, you know, potential whistleblowers from coming forward and doing the right thing, because we've been trying to encourage people to come forward and to report these things. Of course, they come to us in the organization and they say, where is the best place to go? And with, based on all our experiences, we know definitely that place is not the Congress, because like myself, I went to Congress and courts and the IG offices long before I went to the public, to the media. It's when those channels get shut down that we go to the, you know, court of public opinion via so-called, you know, media. And a lot of people, they're under this wrong impression that, oh, whistleblowers are this fish that they're like, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to put this information out. It's just that you can't do anything through these illusionary so-called channels, Congress, Inspector General's office. You know, just name one case where a person who's reporting these issues have been successful in putting a stop to a wrongdoing, criminal activities, waste, fraud, abuse that he or she is reporting, whether it's torture or whether it is in this, you know, the war crime acts being committed. It has never happened. So why even go to these so-called channels when it's the futile attempt to do something about it? But then we go to the media, we make it public, and the worst thing for us, and I'm speaking on behalf of all these whistleblowers, is that in the end, you stop and you say, well, gee, I didn't make any difference. I mean, even when it got out, you think that people would get outraged and they would demand an action or correction, but that didn't happen. Why bother? And the more we have these cases, the worse it's going to become. A lot of people, they go through the, you know, periods in history, whether it's in Germany, you know, under the Nazis, and say, how come millions of people went along with it? Well, that's exactly what we are living under today. Millions of people, even after they become aware, they say nothing. They do nothing about it. Now, with Bradley Manning, you know, this book that you're putting forth, I think that's extremely valuable. That's great. And then we have the irate minority. They are putting the videos and they are activists or active on Bradley Manning case. And with all these activities, you get this indifference from people. And how do you overcome that? You wrote this book. You have it out there. And this is a book that needs to be read by everyone, okay? Anybody who cares about his or her nation, because that's true patriotism. But when you see this incredible indifference, what does it make you feel?
Well, I think you've put your finger on really the most depressing part of this whole story, which is also your story, and that is the vast reserves of apathy, of indifference, and what sometimes seems like a total lack of curiosity in very important issues that affect all of us, because it's what our democratically elected government is doing. And I don't want to overstate, and I'm careful to, you know, not be too pessimistic in my book, but also to make plain that information is not a magic silver bullet. It is never in itself sufficient to cause some important political change, but it is always necessary. And even the Pentagon Papers that Daniel Ellsberg revealed in the early 70s, they did not cause a massive change that many people wanted in the Vietnam War. On the other hand, we do see some positive changes already from WikiLeaks, although mainly not in this country. WikiLeaks did give a little bit of help to the Tunisian uprising that got rid of a dictatorial, tyrannical government. And that's a beautiful thing. That's something that WikiLeaks and allegedly Bradley Manning can be proud of, their small role in pushing democracy and freedom in Tunisia. You see also reforms in the Dominican Republic. I've talked to Haitian American activists who are thrilled about the disclosures of America's policy towards Haiti revealed in the State Department cables, and they're thrilled to have the goods. So information without any kind of political muscle to use it or political organization is not going to do much or even anything. But you can't get political muscle without a little bit of information to kickstart it. So it's really up to us to get the message out, and it's a question of politics more than just a question of writing a book or getting information out there.
We're talking with Chase Madar. His new book is called The Passion of Bradley Manning. And, of course, Sibel Edmonds' new book, Classified Woman, is out and available. And I personally recommend both of them to you. Chase, I agree with your characterization that Daniel Ellsberg's release of the Pentagon Papers did not have the intended effect, or at least the one that I inferred to the intention. But it did have a real impact, and I think... unintentionally, because Nixon used the plumbers to try to silence and discredit Ellsberg, and that ultimately led to the exposure of Watergate and the impeachment and resignation of Richard Nixon. And while we can't predict what the ultimate effects of the WikiLeaks disclosures will be, one hopes that these disclosures will at least provide a cautionary note to presidents in the future who hope to conduct policy and illegal policies in a back channel or secretive way. Do you think that given the claim by the Obama administration to be the most transparent, and of course they won an award for transparency that was accepted in secret, do you see... long-term, any benefits of this, and will it ultimately vindicate Bradley Manning?
Absolutely. In the long term, I am an optimist. And the real impact that these important leaks have on changing and improving our disastrous foreign policy, that's up to us, and that has yet to be seen. And I think having knowledge is always a good thing, even if it does not overnight revolutionize our horrendous dysfunctional foreign policy. It's still a good thing to know what your government is doing, as scandalous as that may sound. After all, it was James Madison who wrote that a popular government without popular information or the means of acquiring it is but a prelude to a tragedy or a farce, or perhaps both. And after the past 10 years of tragic farce in foreign policy, many people in our country, certainly all over the world, are ready for something different. And WikiLeaks is a tool that can help us get there.
Now, one of the things that was not a secret, and again, this reflects badly on both the media and the American people, is the treatment of Private Manning when he was held at Quantico. And that's a highly unusual place to park somebody to begin with. But the treatment, the isolation, the kind of Guantanamo tactics like knocking on his cell door every 5 minutes and requiring him to answer to the question, are you okay? That's just one of the mean-spirited tactics used against him. Talk a little bit more about his incarceration and the gratuitous use of intimidation and other tactics to, in ways that may have actually injured the mental health of Bradley Manning.
Well, his treatment has been just sadistic. On the one hand, he's been treated like an enemy combatant, but on the other hand, his treatment has been par for the course in all America. Now, let me explain that. He's been treated like an enemy combatant in the sense of the extreme cruelty for no good medical reason and no good reason at all of why he was held in solitary confinement pre-trial for 9 months. For some of that time, stripped of all his clothing, stripped of his glasses even, pumped to the gills with antidepressants and psychoactive drugs. This was the kind of thing that the Soviet Union did to their political dissidents. They were put in psychiatric hospitals called psikhushkas, where they were treated like crazy people. Again, the way whistleblowers in many societies across the board are marginalized and pathologized and treated like crazy people. Now, on the other hand, Manning's treatment is not exceptional at all. Here in the United States, we have between 70 and 100,000 Americans doing some kind of long-term solitary confinement, often with the same kind of cruel tricks that were played on Bradley Manning, and often for very arbitrary reasons. I think solitary confinement is properly viewed as torture. It's something that our own Supreme Court came very close to outlawing on Eighth Amendment grounds in 1890, and international law is getting closer and closer to condemning it entirely as a form of torture. So on the one hand, what Bradley Manning's treatment has been exceptional. On the other hand, it is depressingly normal in the United States because we're a country that treats a great many people that way.
Well, and you made a comparison to the treatment of so-called enemy combatants as if, and I'm not inferring that this is your position, but I think too many Americans accept that brutal treatment of so-called terrorists is somehow okay. And even though it violates our treaty agreements, it violates our own constitutional rights, and it's a severe abrogation of what I would consider to be international human rights standards, we feel, the American people, have been led to believe that this is all okay and can be rationalized, because they keep pointing to what they project as a greater evil. And therefore, when we do evil things, we're responding to more evil people who do things that are even worse. And that is a race to the bottom that, unfortunately, I believe we are winning.
Well, that's critical what you say, and it's extremely troubling to see a country like ours glorify its torturers. I don't think even the Soviet Union at the peak of its strength glorified its torturers, or even the South American dictatorships of the 60s, 70s. But here in America, we've come to accept torture as something justified, normal, necessary, and good, and not just by your usual extreme neoconservative reactionaries, but even many liberals have climbed aboard on this trend, and that is deeply distressing. Does nothing to protect our national security. There's no evidence for that. And it's just all about satisfying some kind of primitive bloodlust that we would be much better without.
And Chase, you reference in the book that you went to Guantanamo as part of a group that observed the trial of Omar Khadr, who was the Canadian who was taken into custody in Afghanistan at the age of 14. And his case ended in a plea bargain that was supposed to send him back to his native Canada sometime before the end of 2011. But Khadr remains at Guantanamo, and I just want to point this out because you have the benefit of that experience and that context to make these remarks about the treatment of Manning.
Well, absolutely, and the way Omar Khadr was railroaded is a disgrace. We pretend to be eaten up with concern over the plight of child soldiers all over the world, but the minute that we catch a child soldier who pointed a gun once at American soldiers, we just lose all sympathy, and we call him a little terrorist, and we find some justification to lock him up for as long as possible. Now we are violating the terms of the plea bargain. The Canadian government is also violating their terms, and he's being held in solitary in Guantanamo Bay. And again, I do want to stress that although this is horrible, it's not altogether exceptional in the overall penal landscape of the normal, quote-unquote, American criminal justice system. We lock tens of thousands of our own people up for more prosaic, less exotic crimes. And in California in particular, you probably know about the Pelican Bay Rebellion,
sure,
and hunger strikes of people in solitary.
Yeah.
I'm not saying many of those people haven't done bad things, but many of them were thrown in solitary just because they were accused of being in a gang, because they have the wrong kind of insignia, not because they have done anything horrendous lately. And it is torturing them and driving them into insanity.
So with the backdrop of the Cotter case, and you were a witness to what I call the kangaroo courts at Guantanamo, how much better is the process of the court-martial of Bradley Manning? Is it a fair process? And, for example, the presiding officer there has rejected the defense arguments related to our earlier discussion about the lack of any true cost or consequences from the revelation of these documents through WikiLeaks.
You know, there are so many injustices in this case of Bradley Manning, but I don't think the matter of court procedure makes the top 10 list. And I don't think that if Bradley Manning were to be tried in a federal court instead of a military court-martial, that the outcome would necessarily be better or even that different.
Really?
The problem here is not some abuse of the laws or improper manipulation of laws. The problem is the laws themselves. And our current system of laws encourages extreme government secrecy, overclassification, and comes down hard on anyone, on heroic individuals who violate this. Now, we have yet to see how a military jury is going to deal with all the accusations. Many of them, the most serious charges against Manning, are completely ridiculous, especially the aiding the enemy charge, which has a real chance of just crumpling on impact with a real jury and a real judge, even if the defense was not successful in getting it dismissed out of hand in the pretrial hearing. Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's encouraging. It's not that I expect an acquittal in the Manning court martial, but I would like a process that resembles something fair.
Yes, I hate to be a spoiler. I don't expect an acquittal at all, and I will be shocked if he's not convicted and if he's not sentenced to anything more than 50 years. I think this is a deep injustice, highly unfortunate. But it's really a matter of the political climate. Daniel Ellsberg has always admitted that he broke the law as an important act of patriotic civil disobedience. The reason why he's a free man today is that the Nixon administration was even so much more criminal in the way they went after him, as you know. But the political climate has changed for the worse since then. And back in 1971, there was an acute sense of foreign policy crisis and of domestic crisis due to an overreaching executive that was improperly using the FBI and other security agencies. We have all those same problems today, but without the sense of crisis. And our media and our intellectuals have really failed to detect the urgency of it. And that is what's really going to do in Bradley Manning.
Chase, how can people get a hold of your new book, The Passion of Bradley Manning?
For the time being, it is available only at orbooks.com. The title is The Passion of Bradley Manning, and that's available online. If you pester your local bookseller to order a bulk order, they might be able to do it, but it's best ordered as an electronic book or as a real paper book online from orbooks.com.
Well, Chase, I want to thank you for joining us on The Boiling Frogs. It's great to talk with you. I appreciate that you took on this assignment and published this book. And I think that you offer a very strong case in support of Bradley Manning. And I hope that our listeners will get a copy either electronically or on paper and read it and update themselves on this important issue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Sabelle and Peter. A pleasure talking with you on your wonderful program that's so important to our freedom and our liberties in this country.
Joining us. We'll be back soon with more Boiling Frogs interviews.